Chapter 19. The Last Night. As it always was, the air was fresh and cool on Warriors Hill. The stillness that surrounded the last resting place of the honoured dead of the Unbarrogan was a place of solitude, where a man could wander the tombs of his forefathers and reflect on all that had gone before him and all that had made him who he was. Sigmar remembered coming here on his dooming day, just after he'd broken Wulfgar's arm with a smelting hammer. His father had sent him here to walk through the dead of the tribe and listen to the whispers of the ancestors. Entering the tomb of Redmane Dregor, he'd made offerings to Mor before being plunged into darkness. Trapped within the tomb, he had prayed to Ulric, and the wolf god had given him the strength to free himself from his grandfather's barrow. Sigmar circled higher on the hill, the flagged wrapped body of Offorth held across his chest as he carried him uphill towards his resting place. The old scholar's body weighed next to nothing, and Sigmar was ashamed he had asked so much of this man, who had already given more than enough to his tribe and his emperor. The priest of Mor had spoken the words of warding over Offorth's body, but even they could not say for sure whether that would be enough to resist the sorcery of Nagash. The only sure way to keep Offorth's remains from rising again would be to burn them. But Sigmar had balked at the idea of cremation. Offorth would be interred within Warriors Hill, with the other heroes who had served the Unbarrogan. Sigmar passed the tomb of Trinovantes and Pendrag, feeling his throat tighten and his eyes filled with tears as he thought of his lost friends. They had died in battle and were drinking, feasting and hunting in the halls of Ulric. No man could ask for more. Yet Sigmar selfishly wished they were here beside him, fully armoured and standing ready to give battle against this dreadful foe. At last he reached the tree-covered summit of the hill and laid Offorth's body down on the stone slab at its centre. He unwrapped the flag, exposing Offorth's face, and bent to kiss the old man's forehead. "I will miss you, old friend," said Sigmar. "You kept me honest and true." Sigmar knelt and unhooked a small pouch from his belt, removing a bull's heart he had cut from the animal himself. He placed it in a bronze bowl set into the rock and poured a flask of oil across the bloody organ. Sparks from his tinderbox ignited the oil, and the heart began to burn, slowly at first, for the muscular meat was tough and leathery. Eventually it caught, and the heart fizzed and spat as the fire consumed it. The smell of the cooking meat filled Sigmar's nostrils. "Father Mor, guide this soul to his final rest, and watch over him as he passes from the lands of the living into the realm of the dead. Light his path through the grey vaults and keep the shadow hunters from his back as he makes his way to the halls of Ulric. Judge him worthy, for no truer son of the Unbarrogan has come before you. Offorth was a warrior without a sword, but thanks to his actions, the world is a safer place. His peace was won with words and wise counsel, not with blades and war. Would that we could all be so wise. Guide him to his last rest, Father Mor, and I will preserve his memory for as long as I shall live." The heart hissed as it was consumed, the fire flickering with a purple light. The dancing flames lit Offorth's face, and Sigmar stood, placing a hand on his friend's chest. A tomb had been dug on the eastern face of the hill, and with the offering to Mor complete, Sigmar bent to lift Offorth's body once again. Cold air brushed past him, carrying the whispers of ancient voices, fleeting sighs of long-dead warriors, and the murmur of ghostly war-shouts. Sigmar looked down, seeing that the rune-etched haft of Galmaraz glittered with power. The hairs on the back of Sigmar's neck stood erect, and he knew he was not alone. His hand slid down to his warhammer, and he spun around, bringing the weapon up to his shoulder in one smooth motion. The hill thronged with ghostly warriors, scores of them drifting uphill from their tombs with axes and unsheathed swords. They converged on the summit, and Sigmar knew he could never fight his way through so many. Alfgeir and Wulfgart had counseled against climbing Warriors Hill alone, but Sigmar had denied any attempt to provide him with a protective escort. It felt like the right thing to do at the time, but now seemed foolish and arrogant. The spirits closed in, crowding the summit of the hill, and Sigmar took a deep breath, flexing his fingers on the textured grip of his hammer. The dead warriors were translucent, the wavering outline of trees visible through their immaterial forms. A fearsome Unberogan war cry died on Sigmar's lips as three figures stepped from the ranks of the spirit warriors, limbed in shimmering winter's light. Armoured in the style of many years ago, some in bronze, some in iron, they wore Unberogan war helms and carried long swords that glittered with frostlight. Wolfskin cloaks hung from their shoulders, and though Sigmar knew he should be afraid, nothing of these phantoms sent any tremors of fear through him. The largest of the three snapped up the visor of his helm, and Sigmar felt himself hurled back to his childhood as the stern features of his father were revealed. King Bjorn looked upon his son with loving, paternal affection, his lined and bearded face alight with pride. At his father's right stood Pendrag, resplendent in the armour he had worn in the defence of Middenheim. Even the blade he bore was a shimmering likeness of the rune fan Sigmar had commanded him to wield. On Bjorn's left was a young man, barely old enough to ride to war, and Sigmar's heart broke to see the youthful features of Trinavantes. 25 years had passed since Trinavantes' death at Astafan, the first battle they had ridden to after their blood night, and Sigmar was amazed to think he had ever been that young. Tears flowed freely at the sight of these heroic warriors, friends who had stood beside him in battle, and the father who had set him on the path to becoming a man. Their legacy was the Empire, and their role in shaping him into the man who would build it was immeasurable. Trinavantes, Ravina's brother and Geryon's twin, smiled at Sigmar, and though he wanted to say how much he missed them all, how much he had loved them, he simply couldn't. The words choked him, loss and grief like a powerful hand around his throat. His father nodded, and he knew they understood. The spectral army moved past him, and he felt their pride in his accomplishments. They watched over him from Ulrich's halls, and they were at peace, knowing the lives they had lost in defence of their homelands had not been given in vain. Sigmar lowered his hammer as the spirits of the dead Unberogan lifted Offoth's body from the rock and moved off down the hillside to his open tomb. Bjorn, Pendrag, and Trinavantes turned away and began moving off again, their duty to Offoth stronger than any dark sorcery that sought to break the chains of loyalty and duty that bound the Unberogan together. Sigmar had never been so humbled in all his life. To know that the blood of these great warriors flowed in his veins was the greatest honour Sigmar could imagine. One by one, the soul lights of the dead began to dim. Trinavantes faded back into the mists of memory, and Sigmar raised a hand in farewell. He thought he saw Trinavantes smile, but couldn't be sure. Pendrag's form grew more and more insubstantial until he too had vanished. Eventually, only Bjorn remained. He and Sigmar stood in silent communion, and of all the things that mattered in this world, his father's pride was the most important. Bjorn looked down at Reichdorf, and Sigmar saw a wry smile tug at the corner of his mouth, feeling his proud amazement at the magnificent city that had arisen from the small settlement he had known in life. His father pointed towards the city and turned back to Sigmar. Know them and understand them, for it will make you mighty. The words were not spoken, but Sigmar heard them as clearly as though his father had been standing right next to him. King Bjorn nodded, knowing Sigmar had understood his message. He moved off into the darkness and was soon lost to sight as his shade returned to the realms beyond the knowledge of mortals. Sigmar sank to his knees, overcome with emotion. Galmaraz dropped to the ground, and he buried his head in his hands. He wept as memories of his father and friends surged to the fore, but they were not tears shed in grief, but in remembrance of all the joy they had shared in life. At last, his tears were spent, and Sigmar stood tall as he turned to look at the city below, heartened by the thousands of pinpricks of light that glittered in the darkness. In the last month, the population had quadrupled, with thousands coming in from the countryside ahead of the rising tide of undead. Warriors, farmers and craftsmen thronged the city streets, frightened and cold and hungry, but unwilling to give up. Though a black host of the dead waited beyond the city walls, this island of humanity still stood inviolate. That alone was cause for hope, and as his father's last words echoed within his mind, He felt his gaze drawn up and out of his body, climbing into the sky and expanding to encompass the entirety of the empire. His awareness of the land was complete, and he saw the vast swathes of forest, rivers and hills. Flatlands and coastline stretched from the towering mountains of the south and east to the cliffs of the western wastelands and frozen ice-locked shores of the north. Like a creeping sickness, the armies of Nagash spread throughout the empire. Hordes of the dead enslaved to the will of the ancient necromancer like warhounds on a fraying leash. Bound together by a web of dark sorcery with Nagash at its centre, the armies of the dead jealously strangled the life from the land of mortals. The southernmost reaches of the empire were already enveloped in darkness, but across the empire scattered lights of resistance flared brightly against the encroaching shadow. Sigmar saw the palisade forts of the Udos besieged by corpses of ragged flesh, while other clans were pushed into bleak highland valleys where they fought desperate battles for survival. Con Carsten gave battle from the parapets of Wulfilla's rebuilt castle, his army a patchwork of warriors from a dozen different clans. Welded together by the common foe, they fought as brothers, though they scrapped like bitter foes in times of peace. In the east, Count Adelhard led daring hit-and-run attacks against the dead, riding at the head of glorious winged lancers, whooping with excitement as they charged hither and thither through the ranks of the dead with wild abandon. The Ostrogoths did not build cities, their people living in settlements that could be broken down at a moment's notice and loaded onto wagons for transport. The dead had no focus for their assault, and the Ostrogoth cavalry armies encircled and destroyed their enemies piecemeal. The Cherusans and Talutans took refuge behind the walls of their great cities. Krugar fought heroically on the spiked walls of Talahim, the great crater city that nestled like a giant eye in the enormous expanse of the great forest. Always, where the fighting was thickest, Krugar hewed the undead with glittering sweeps of Utensial. Further west, Aloysius defended Hokagig with all the wild fury for which his kinsmen were famed. Forced to fight with every weapon available, many of the Cherusans chewed wild root and drove themselves into bloody frenzies. Atop the spire of the Fauchlag Rock, Mercer and his warriors hurled the dead from the walls of their soaring city. The cliff-like sides of the rock writhed with climbing horrors, yet the city still held. Mercer's runefang shone with simple purity, and where it smote, the dead could not resist its power. Count Otwin's lands were near empty, his people scattered by the sudden invasion of the dead from the wastelands to the northwest. Long shunned by the living, these lands had vomited forth the ravening tide of the dead that had driven the Thuringians from their lands. Many now fought in Middenheim, or had since fled to Marburg. Jutunsrik was a city of the dead, its streets empty of life and infested with degenerate cannibal creatures. Even if this war against Nagash could be won, Jutunsrik would forever be a forsaken and damned place where no soul would seek to live again. Its great buildings and stone walls would fall into disrepair, and within the span of a lifetime, no one would know that men had once lived there. Further south in Marburg, the dead hurled themselves at the walls of a great citadel, but the defenders here were resolute and filled with determination to hold. Here the power of the undead seemed weakest, as though a turning point in the battle for Marburg had been reached, and mortals now had the upper hand. Sigmar scanned the walls of the citadel for Count Aldred, but could not see the ruler of the Endels. Princess Marika and Count Marius fought side by side, and when Sigmar saw the shimmering blue blade of Ulfshard in the Jutone Count's hand, he knew with heavy heart that Aldred was dead. Setting aside his grief, Sigmar's awareness of the Empire shrank until he found himself staring at Reichdorf once more. Despite everything that had been lost, Reichdorf remained. Enemies of the most terrible aspect stood poised to destroy it, but there was still hope. Some people called hope a weakness, claiming it was foolish to trust in the world's inherent natural justice. Sigmar knew better. Hope was strength. Hope could drive men and women to the most incredible feats of heroism, from the everyday kindnesses between friends to the epic, world-changing feats of kings and warriors. Sigmar smiled to himself, understanding that most world-changing events came about not through the actions of so-called great leaders, but ordinary men and women driven to extraordinary heights of courage. And as he had seen his land, so too he saw his people. Sigmar's sight travelled the streets of Reichdorf, seeing the strength that resided in every man and woman taking shelter within the city's walls. Though his body knelt atop Warrior's Hill, Sigmar roamed freely through the city, flying over its thatched roofs and along its cobbled streets as though transformed into an invisible observer of life. He saw acts of tiny kindness between people who had never ventured further than the outskirts of their villages and who had been brought up to fear and mistrust outsiders. These people now shared what little food they had with those they would have fought only a few years before. Here, an Azerborn woman offered bread to Burgundian children orphaned by the fighting. There, an Unbarogan family sheltered Teutons and Endels within their home. In a silent, firelit dwelling in the northern quarter of the city, Orvin handed down his father's helmet to his son, Teon. The lad took the helmet, and even as he slid it over his head, Sigmar saw the shame that he had not been kinder to his old teacher. For his part, Orvin wished he could tell Teon how proud he was, but he didn't know how to begin. He loved his son, but a warrior's duty without a wife at his side had made them strangers. Instead, they simply sat and sharpened their swords and polished their armour in strained silence. Though there was no affection between them, both Teon and Orvin would fight for the Empire, and both would die if need be. Sigmar passed onwards, seeing Freya coupling with Gar, the commander of the Queen's Eagles. This was the Azerborn Queen's way, using sex as a means of wringing each moment dry of sensation and taking advantage of all that life had to offer. She was a passionate woman and lived without compromise. Sigmar admired her for that, but knew she could never be his empress. Freya would never be any one man's woman. He did not linger on her lovemaking, but smiled as he saw Sigulf and Fridlifer practicing swordplay in the other room. His heart ached to see these boys and not to know them, but to tear them from their old life for one they didn't know and wouldn't want would be a cruelty he could not inflict. These boys knew him as the Emperor and would never know him as a father. Though it cut deeper than the sharpest sword, Sigmar knew it was the only thing that could be done. Moving on, he saw Gavanon the smith and his son Bison with Master Alaric. They rolled the war machine they had been working on for weeks on end towards the eastern gates of the city. Elswith was right. The blind smith would never willingly give up working, knowing all that would be left to him was a slow decline into death. To continue working gave him purpose, and that purpose kept him alive. Bison was a hulking giant of a warrior, his mind left in tatters after Blackfyre Pass. Both men had given so much in service of the Empire, but each was still willing to give more. Master Alaric had once again come to the aid of Sigmar's people, which spoke volumes of his character, for a dwarf's friendship was never given lightly. Sigmar was thankful every day that the irascible runesmith had seen fit to be his friend. Alfgeir sat in the longhouse with his knights as they told bawdy tales and made proud boasts. Captain Leodin's thread scythes drank here too. These men were eager for the coming fight, painting fire masks on their helms and images of the sun on their shields. If they were to fight in twilight, then they would bring their own light. Leodin drank with his men, the barriers of rank broken down on this last night, but Alfgeir sat apart from his knights. He drank sparingly, bound to these fine Unbarogan men, but apart from them. 30 years separated him from the next oldest of his warriors, and where their thoughts were fixed on the battle to come, Alfgeir's were turned inwards, looking back over a life lived with honour and courage, but ultimately alone. In that respect, Sigmar felt more kinship with Alfgeir than any other man in Reichdorf. The Marshal of the Reich missed Offorth. Yet another thread linking him to his glorious youth cut away like a fraying rope that was on the verge of snapping. Where most men pushed thoughts of falling in battle aside, Alfgeir brooded on them, knowing his death was almost certain on the morrow. Saddened, Sigmar flew on, passing Cuthwin and Wenild as they drank and remembered happier times. Sigmar remembered catching the pair of them sneaking across the marketplace to spy on the Blood Knight before the ride to Astafan. Neither lad had been old enough to fight, and to see them as grown men was a stark reminder of how much time had passed since then. Though it had been many years since Cuthwin and Wenild had seen one another, they picked up where they had left off, as though it had only been a few days. Such friendships were rare, and Sigmar dearly hoped they would survive tomorrow's bloodshed. Lastly, he moved to the large house in the south of Reichdorf, where Wulfgart and Maeve lived. Once again, its walls were warm and its welcome complete. Wulfgart and Maeve and Ulrich lay curled up together on their bed, sleeping in each other's arms and content to pass this time together. Joy touched Sigmar at this sight, a man and his wife and their child together, all pretense and antagonism forgotten as the depth of their love for one another drove out all pettiness or recriminations. This had been Sigmar's dream before the hag woman had cruelly disabused him of the notion that he could ever aspire to such a life. Knowing he could never have the simple pleasures of hearth and home, wife and child, Sigmar had made his peace with knowing that the Empire was his bride. He had sworn to love it and no other, and he had kept his faith with that, sacrificing his desire for love and companionship to be the man he needed to be in order to rule. Seeing Wulfgart and Maeve, with Ulrich nestled in the protective embrace of her father, made that sacrifice worth every moment spent alone and without Ravina by his side. In that moment, Sigmar vowed that when this world was done with him, when he was ready to act upon his father's words, he would honour his promise to Ravina. When the Empire was strong enough not to need him, he would walk the wolf's road he had been promised in Ulrich's fire so long ago it felt like it belonged to the story of another man's life. Sigmar flew up and over Reichdorf, understanding that the strength in every person came from the life each one treasured. That it could be snatched away at any moment made it all the sweeter, driving men and women to chase their dreams and make them real. The dead had no dreams, no ambition, and no forward momentum. If Nagash defeated Sigmar and covered the world in shadow, then it would stagnate, becoming a barren rock bereft of life and light. To cheat death and achieve immortality was one thing, but to rule over a world of grey ashen wastelands populated only by the shuffling, mindless dead was no life at all. What could any man want with such a prize? High upon Warrior's Hill, Sigmar opened his eyes, feeling a swelling sense of humility as he looked down on Reichdorf with his mortal eyes once more. He rose to his feet and walked back down the hill towards his longhouse. Beyond the city was darkness, an uninterrupted sea of shadow and death. Curiously uplifted by that, Sigmar found his fear of the dead had completely vanished. The outcome of tomorrow's battle was unimportant. That he fought in defiance of Nagash's lifeless, empty future was enough. Sigmar would ride out and give battle, but he would fight with all the Empire at his back. Thousands had gathered to hear the Emperor speak, filling the square at the centre of Reichdorf with a press of bodies like the crowd at an execution. Sigmar looked up to see the twin moons slung low in the sky, as though eager to witness this moment. His closest warriors gathered around him, and people hung from windows and gathered on rooftops, eager to hear what the Emperor had to say as the time of battle drew near. Freya and her queen's eagles formed a ring around Sigmar, who sat atop his horse beside the Oath Stone. His mount was a dappled grey gelding with a bright red caparison and a mane pleated with silver cord. Armoured in his dwarf forge plate, Sigmar was a single source of brightness in the darkness, his armour gathering all the moonlight and magnifying it tenfold. Sigmar's head was bare, his long hair unbound and spilling around his shoulders. His pale blue and green eyes swept over the thousands waiting to hear him speak, and he felt their belief in him wash over him like a tide. People of all tribes were gathered before him. They had asked much of Sigmar over the years, and now it was his turn to ask something of them. He knew they would not refuse him. Sigmar lifted Galmaraz, and the ancient heirloom of King Kurgan glimmered with runic traceries as it sensed it would soon be set loose amongst the unliving. "People of the Empire, we are besieged by an army of the dead," began Sigmar. A dread necromancer from the dawn of time has invaded our lands, murdering our people and enslaving those he kills to march in his dread legions. He comes not for plunder or any reason conquerors give, but simply to drain the land of life. He comes to our city to retrieve a powerful crown, forged by his own hand in an age forgotten by all save Nagash himself. He must not succeed, for the crown has the power to enslave all the lands of the living. I cannot stand by and let this happen, and nor will you. Sigmar's voice grew in power as he spoke and saw the effect his words were having. They believed him, really believed him. They trusted him to deliver them from this terrible foe, but this was not a battle that would be won by one man. It would need to be won by all the people of the Empire. He saw they were afraid, and Sigmar remembered what his father had said before he rode to Astafen. He recognized the universal truth of these words as he said them anew, like a father passing age-one wisdom down to his son. I know the fear that consumes your innards like a snake, but have courage, for we are living folk of flesh and blood. Feel your heart pumping that blood around your body. It is hot and vibrant, filled with all the passions of the living. Love, hate, joy, anger, fear, sorrow, happiness, exultation. Feel them all, and you will know you are alive, that your soul is free, and you are a slave to no one. Sigmar jabbed Galmaraz towards the east and shouted his last demand. It is the dead beyond our walls that shuffle and wail, crawl and cower under the spell of their dark master who should fear us. Though the sun is shrouded by shadow, I call upon you to take up your weapons and sally forth with me to meet this foul enemy. Thousands of swords were drawn from scabbards and raised high. Axes waved and spears stabbed the air as the people gathered in Reichdorf screamed Sigmar's name. The walls shook with a deafening volume, and the carrion birds perched on the roofs and garrets of the city took to the air with raucous cause of fear. The swelling roar spread through the city, taken up by every living soul in Reichdorf, even those too far away to hear Sigmar's words. Together we will defeat the Legion of Nagash, shouted Sigmar. We will send him, screaming to the underworld that waits to consume him. Rally, people of the Empire! Rally to me and fight! Sigmar led the way through the streets of Reichdorf towards the splintered wreckage of the Ostgate. Behind him marched a column of tribesmen, thousands upon thousands of warriors, men and women, old men and young, mothers, daughters, fathers and sons. Those without swords carried iron-tipped cudgels, butcher's hooks, felling axes, or clubs formed from broken furniture. Sigmar's army was everyone in Reichdorf, peasant and noble-born alike. They came with him, chanting his name like a mantra or a prayer, their belief in him like a force of nature or some divine mandate stolen from the gods themselves. His boon companions rode at his side, and though this could very well be the last day of the Empire, Sigmar faced it with pride and courage. High Priestess Alessa was waiting for him at the Ostgate, surrounded by 100 warriors with their heavy broadswords drawn. She carried a heavy iron box, banded with silver and secured by a lock of the same metal. Dark earth clung to the box, as though it had only recently been dug from the ground. Sigmar could feel the dark power bound to the dread artifact within, remembering the foul deeds it had driven him to before.
"You are sure about this?"
said Alessa, tears streaming down her face.
"I am," said Sigmar. "There is no other way to face Nagash and live."
Alessa nodded, as though she had been expecting this.
"You will need to be strong, Sigmar Heldenhammer," she said. "It will tempt you with all the secret things you hold deep in your heart."
Sigmar shook his head with a derisive sneer. "It offered me my heart's desire once before, and I rejected it. There is nothing else it can show me."
"I hope you are right," said Alessa, opening the box. "Or else it will not be Nagash who destroys the lands of men. It will be you."